It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today. Welcome, welcome. Indeed, it is 1930 UTC. Hey, we got a lot of people in Calm already. If you don't know, Calm is the chat. It's a live show. So please, if you want to interact or hang out with other people that are listening on and on radio, just launch Calm and then press G for go to and then type in a non-radio all lowercase for the room name. I've got a feeling most people listening to a non-radio know about SDF, but in case you didn't, that's... They're kind of semi-linked, so anyway, just check that out. All right, well, we're going to start off the day like we always do with the world news. The world news, even. It sounds kind of like I'm saying world there. World news. Hey, Ratsu Publius Hardmouse, thanks a lot for tuning in. Appreciate it very much. All right, let's start off here with routers. South Korean delivery workers say coronavirus boom means relentless toil. South Korea's delivery workers have fallen into what they call a legal blind spot and say it's a deadly place to be as the novel coronavirus drives an unprecedented boom in online business. Labor rights have made huge progress in South Korea over the past couple of decades, but the couriers say they have seen little benefit. Work-life balance? That's another world, said Jiang Sang-rok, 51, a contract worker who delivers parcels for Hanjin Transportation, one of South Korea's two big delivery companies. Parcel shipments increased some 12% a year in South Korea from 2004 as online shopping grew, then surged 23% from February to October this year, compared with the same period last year. The big delivery firms are enjoying strong profits. CJ Logistics, Charlie Juliet Logistics, reported a 21% rise in first half operating profit, and Hanjin Transportation posted a 35% increase. Workers and union officials say legal loopholes leave them exposed to pressure to put in unsustainable hours, conditions they say that have contributed to death. Labor activists say they have compiled accounts from relatives of 14 people whose deaths this year they attributed to a system that means workers have to put in unreasonably long hours to make ends meet. So it's very sad. Indeed, sad story. One of the men who died was Kim Wong-jong, who developed breathing difficulties at work. His father blamed the relentless demands of his job. He was running around for 14 hours without time to eat, the father Kim Sang-young said, at a rally in October. And then they have a few other anecdotes of friends and family members who have passed away while being overworked. Reuters. All right, we'll go with that. We'll call it Reuters. So this is from Reuters. We'll say Reuters today. All right, additional story here from them. Two hurt in a knife attack in the Swiss city of Lugano. A Swiss woman grabbed a woman by the neck and stabbed another in an apartment store in the southern Swiss city of Lugano on Tuesday, police said. Ticino Cantonal Police said the attack was over and the suspect, a 28-year-old who lives in the area, was in custody. One victim sustained serious but not life-threatening injuries and another was lightly injured. Police said they had not ruled out terrorist motives, but the case was still under investigation. Hey, Exiled! Welcome, welcome! And X1, thank you for joining. Alright, so keep on rolling here. French police are investigating a brutal dispersal of Paris migrant camp. This is coming to us from France24.com, and this was covered in a bunch of different sites. I just picked this one to read the story from. French authorities on Tuesday French authorities on Tuesday ordered an investigation into the forceful removal by police of a camp of migrants in central Paris that prompted outrage over the brutal tactics used. Interior Minister Gérald Darmanin said he had agreed. We'll put that in. Boop, boop, boop. No, not ignore. There it is. Crud. Sometimes my copy and paste... Yeah, my copy and paste job is not so good. There we go. Anyway, Minister Gerald Darmanin said he had agreed to a proposal by the Prairies Police Chief to immediately refer the issue to the National Police Inspectorate General, which investigates officers' conduct. The governor is allegedly facing a storm of criticism over a new security law that opponents say will erode the accountability of the police. Oh yeah, we've talked about that a few times. Basically, you're not supposed to take photos of the policeman's face or distribute it if the intent is to harm the police. So, but it's worded very loosely, so basically the fear is that if you take a picture of a cop, then they're going to charge you under this law even if you don't actually use the photo in that intent, or if you're just trying to hold the police accountable. Of course, in this event, volunteers had helped set up about 500 blue tents at Place de la République, which is in French, that were quickly filled by migrants, the majority from Afghanistan. Police arrived shortly afterwards to remove the tents, sometimes with people still inside, in the face of the protests from migrants and jeers from activists. "They are too violent," said Shab Dubin, a 34-year-old Afghan, crying after being evicted. "We just want a roof." And just, I keep pressing I for insert mode because I'm used to VI, I guess. Anyway, the place is called Place de la République. Whenever I'm trying to put stuff into COM, COM has a bunch of different commands, but I is ignore if you want to hide somebody. It is not insert mode. Anyway, let's keep on going. We're making such great progress. I blame the tea. I've been drinking lots of tea this morning. Lots of Dongfeng Myrin, which is really good. It's a good break from the Jinjin Mei, so I've been enjoying it. All right, let's keep on rolling. Two blasts kill seven in Syrian rebel-held northwest near Turkish border. Two bomb blasts killed at least seven people and wounded scores on Tuesday in areas of northwest Syria near the Turkish border and under heavy Turkish influence, witnesses and police say. There's a photo. There's three photos of burned-out cars, it looks like. Cars and rubble. And it looks like a lot of men trying to lift a large, like a lamppost or something. Anyway, that's not relevant to the story that we're reading immediately here. Let's keep on going. Five people were killed and 20 wounded, some critically, in a blast that exploded at a road junction on the outskirts of the city of Al-Bab, north of Aleppo province, they said. A few hours later, at least two civilians were killed and 17 wounded in a car blast in the city of Afrin, a mainly Kurdish area, which Turkish forces and their Syrian allies took from the Kurdish YPG, that's Yankee Papa Golf Militia, in 2018. Videos posted on social media showed footage of mangled cars and extensive damage to an industrial area with fires burning. Reuters could not immediately vouch for their authenticity. Civil defense officials said the death toll was expected to rise. The two cities, which Turkey administers with the help of Syrian Arab rebels at backs, have in the last year been frequently hit by bombings detonated in crowded civilian areas. Turkey and its rebel allies accused the YPG of carrying out the blasts that have killed dozens in the mainly Arab-populated towns near the border under their control, saying their goal is to make them ungovernable and sow fear among civilians. Very sad unrest there. And to keep on the murder and death train that's not COVID-related, hundreds have been killed in a massacre in Ethiopia's Tigray, Rights Body is saying. And this comes to us from France 24. A local youth group aided by police and militia killed at least 600 people in a rampage on November 9th in Ethiopia's northern Tigray region, the National Rights Watchdog and said Tuesday. The massacre in the town of Maykadra, I'll put that in COM because it has a hyphen in it. Maykadra is the worst known attack on civilians during Ethiopia's ongoing internal conflict, pitting federal forces against leaders of Tigray's ruling party, the Tigray People's Liberation Front, which is shortened as TPLF, so Tigray People's Liberation Front. Amnesty International previously reported that scores and likely hundreds of people were stabbed or hacked to death in the November 9th attack in Maykadra. But Tuesday's report from Ethiopian Human Rights Commission provides a more detailed account, accusing a Tigrayan youth group known as Samri of targeting non-Tigrayan seasonal laborers working on the sesame and sorghum farms in the area. The HRC is a government-affiliated but independent body whose chief commissioner, Daniel Bakel, was appointed by Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed. So, this is crazy. That's just wild. 600 people hacked up with machetes. I just can't even picture the... I can't even picture the scene. It's like hundreds of people is just like a large volume of people. The perpetrators killed hundreds of people, beating them with batons, sticks, stabbing them with knives, machetes, and hatchets, and strangling them with ropes. They also looted and destroyed properties, the report said. So, we can only pray for, I'm sure we could do other things, governments could do other things, but... right now, it's in Ethiopia, so it's not getting tons of coverage. But anyway, it's a sad thing. So anyway, there you go. That's some news for you. And basically, we're at the point where we've done a lot of talking about sad things and about the world stuff. So we're going to play a song real quick. And then after the music...
Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
After the music, we'll play a song. And then after that... We'll do some domestic news in the U.S., talk a little bit about that, and go through some headlines. I'll probably run out of time, and then we'll just run through some stuff. I am starting to try something new. We're going to put, or I'm going to start putting the list of all the articles. I'm going to take a list of all the URLs, and I'm going to post them on anonradio.net under the show or under the name, so you'll be able to find them. And look at the links later if you want to. All right, so that is that. This song is called White Hot Magic. It's by the band called The Polyamorous Affair, and I really like it. It was originally in a vodka ad, and I liked the 10-30-second clip of it so much I went out and bought the record. So here you go. This is White Hot Magic.
Listening to Anon Radio, powered by SDF Public Access Unix System.
Welcome back. Yes, yes, indeed. this show and everything on Anon Radio is powered by SDF. So thank you for your support there. You'll hear SDF mentioned a lot. But let's talk about some domestic news. A lot of times domestic news seems kind of dull to me because it's mostly centered around politics. But, I mean, it's stuff that's important to know about. And so I still try and read it sometimes. It's everywhere. Anyway. The Super Dimension Fortress Public Access Unix System. It's an important component of our life. I'm actually wearing the 32-year SDF shirt from 1987 to 2019. So 2020 would be 33 years. Pretty rad. All right, here we go. U.S. President-elect Joe Biden focused on building his incoming administration and offered a message of healing on Tuesday as his transition team began contacting federal agencies to prepare for a handover of power in January from Donald Trump. The Democratic former vice president has been moving swiftly to assemble his team and make cabinet choices after defeating the Republican incumbent in the November 3rd election. Trump has waged a flailing legal battle to try to overturn the results, falsely claiming the election was stolen from him. The election's over. It's time to put aside the partisanship and the rhetoric designed to demonize one another. We have to come together. Biden, due to office on January 20th, said on Twitter on Tuesday, Trump has said he will never concede the election, but after weeks of limbo, his administration on Monday finally gave the green light for the formal transfer of power to begin. That process has been held up despite Biden emerging as a clear winner and world leaders recognizing him as the next president. Monday's announcement meant that Biden team qualifies. I feel like I'm breathing heavy. I've been drinking so much tea. I'm probably too hyper. Anyway, sorry. Monday's announcement meant that Biden's team qualifies for $6.3 million in funds, and among other things, can officially coordinate with the 17 agencies that are part of U.S. intelligence gathering, according to the nonpartisan Partnership for Public Service. Biden team also gets access to federal office space, secure facilities for intelligence briefings, and the succession plans for executive agencies. In addition, the State Department typically supports a transition team's discussion with foreign leaders. One of the first departments that Biden's team reached out to was the Pentagon, underscoring the importance of emphasizing national security during the transition. Trump fired Defense Secretary Mark Esper on November 9th. In a small but symbolic move hours after the transition announcement on Monday night, Biden opened a .gov website available only to governmental agencies for his transition, launching buildbackbetter.gov. So, it's pretty cool. There's more analysis and details into this over there at Reuters, if you're into it. Welcome. I want to say welcome to new folks that have jumped in. Claudio, Jazzmaz, thanks for being part of the conversation. Oh, that's what happened. I was like, why was there so little domestic news? I just had my bookmark out of order. Let's do a couple more world stories.
World news.
You can't escape it. Germany and Turkey trade accusations over interception of a Turkish vessel. This is something we talked about yesterday, because Turkey was upset that a German-led NATO task force was trying to enforce this arms embargo against Libya. So Turkey and Germany traded barbs on Tuesday after German soldiers boarded a Turkish vessel on behalf of an EU military mission in the Mediterranean, with Berlin calling its NATO allies' protests unjustified, and Ankara saying the move was illegal. Turkey protested on Monday after German forces belonging to the European Union's Irini mission, tasked with enforcing a UN arms embargo against Libya, boarded and searched a Turkish cargo ship with the EU suspected of taking weapons to Libya illegally. Ankara said the ship was carrying humanitarian aid and that the German team violated international law by not waiting for the Turkish permission to board the Rosaline A. It later summoned the EU, German, and Italian envoys to Ankara to protest. German Defense Minister Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer said on Tuesday that Turkey's protests were unjustified. So, this is going to be an ongoing thing where, it sounds like more like they were just insulted. Turkey was insulted that Germany didn't ask permission and just boarded the ship instead of getting permission. But Anyway, they released a minute-long video of the surveillance footage. If you want to check it out, go head over to Reuters and look for yesterday's story about this. Now, the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict is still making news. Stuff is still happening. It's almost done, though. Peace seems to be simmering down, thanks to Russia. But this is from France 24. After 6 weeks of fighting in the Nagorno-Karabakh between Armenian and Azerbaijani forces, a Russian-brokered ceasefire has resulted in a military victory for Azerbaijan. But Yerevan now accuses Baku of using cluster bombs. And Baku is B-A-K-U, and Yerevan, I will put in com, because, oh boy, it's hard for me to say. Which are banned under international law, and white phosphorus, a devastating incendiary weapon. France 24's Luc Schrago, Romeo Langlois, and Mohamed Farhat bring us this exclusive report from the Yerevan's... Oh, lame. Anyway, there's a report from the hospital. It's a video on France 24. Boo! Boo! And apparently it's 9 minutes long, but it uses some kind of non-free plugin because it won't play on my computer. All right. Okay, now that was it. There we go. So let's keep on going now. We've got 8 minutes or so. Then it's time for the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe. Get all of your ball joint doll news right there. If you got questions, send them an email. But, oh man, or maybe it's golf balls. It's all sorts of stuff. It could be anything. but the Dubious Goals Committee is every day at 1930 UTC. So definitely worth checking out. All right, so let's jump into some more domestic news. Omaha police chiefs say officers acted appropriately in shooting black man. So this is wonderful headlines from The Guardian. Omaha's police chief said on Monday that two officers acted appropriately when a black man was fatally shot during a traffic stop last week because the man repeatedly failed to comply with their commands. Video of the confrontation will not be immediately released. Police Chief Todd Schmaderer, put that in comp, that's a interesting name, said his officers followed department policy when Kenneth Jones was shot last Thursday because Jones reached for a gun in his waistband and disregarded commands. Schmaderer showed several photos from the traffic stop during a news conference, but said the full video would not be released until after a grand jury has reviewed what happened. In this incident, the officers faced a very difficult situation with a person with a gun who would not comply with their commands. Schmaderer said, "My senior command staff and I are in agreement in this matter. The officer used deadly force in accordance with our policy." Protesters gathered outside Omaha police headquarters over the weekend to demand the release of video footage. Schmaderer said releasing the video now could taint the grand jury investigation. Two officers have been placed on leave until the investigation is completed. Police have identified them as Dan Falconer and Richard Martier, each of whom had been with the department since 2016. Police have said the officers pulled the vehicle Jones was riding in after observing it stopped in the middle of the street, then driving forward several feet and stopping several times. The officers said they thought the driver might be impaired. golf ball jointed dolls. Now that would be a trip. Yeah, we'll see what happened there. Good luck. Hospitals in the U.S. say, "We're drowning. COVID cases," this is from Reuters, "COVID cases flood hospitals in America's heartland. The vital signs..." Oh, yeah. I just want to make sure that this isn't just a people fluff story. I didn't think it was, but make sure. Yeah. All right. "The vital signs of a 30-year-old COVID-19 victim were crashing, and Kearney County Hospital in rural Lakin, Kansas, just wasn't equipped to handle the case. Miller, Kearney's chief medical officer, who doubles as the county health officer, called around to larger hospitals in search of an ICU bed. With coronavirus cases soaring throughout Kansas, he said he couldn't find a single one. By the time a bed opened elsewhere the following day, the young man was near death. For a full 45 minutes, Miller and his staff performed chest compressions in a desperate attempt to save him. Somehow, Miller said, the patient regained a pulse and was dispatched in an ambulance to the larger facility about 25 miles away. Miller then prayed with the family, whom he knew very well, from Lakin, a town of just a few thousand people. It's truly a miracle he survived. COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations are spiking nationally, but the Midwest, encompassing a dozen states between Ohio and the Dakotas, has been especially brutalized. Reported case rates are more than double that of any other region in the United States, according to the COVID Tracking Project, a volunteer data run data provider, from mid-June to mid-November. Reported cases in the Midwest rose more than 20-fold. So, it's very sad, and the article goes on to kind of detail, yeah, brutality. Like there's any kind of animus in a virus. But that's kind of the, yeah, it's ravaging the Midwest, and anywhere where there's small towns or small hospitals, they might have 0 to 1 beds. This is kind of what was happening in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas, and is happening in, like, happened in Arizona and in some of the indigenous people's places or reservations and stuff. Is it's like these hospitals are there to set a broken bone or give you some, you know, controlled drugs. So it's very dangerous, and it's, you cannot wear a mask if you want to, but I mean, if you live out in the middle of nowhere and you get sick, guess what? You're on your own, and that rugged individualism isn't going to save you. So anyway, we've got just a little bit of time, so we'll just do some more headlines. We'll do some headlines, less in-depth stuff here. So Trump officials are rushing to mine desert havens native tribes consider holy. So since January, San Carlos Apache tribal minister Winsler Nosey Sr. has been sleeping in a teepee at a campground in southeastern Arizona's Oak Flat, sprawling high desert oasis filled with groves of ancient trees and spires. Where is this? The colonel curses. The Trump administration is cutting corners and doing a rush job just to take care of Rio Tinto, said the Democratic Arizona Representative Raul Grijalva, and the fact they're doing it during COVID makes it even more disgusting. Trump and Rio Tinto know the tribe's reaction will be very strong and public under normal circumstances, but the tribes are trying to save their people right now. So, it is basically what they're doing is they're transferring a large chunk of native land to the government, and then they're going to mine it. So, yeah, the U.S. government is trying to screw over the indigenous people once again. Ah, well, that would make sense. That's probably why they're doing it. Rio Tinto Zinc is one of the world's largest non-ferrous metal mining companies. Comes to us from Publius. So we'll see what happens. Ford orders 12 ultra-cold freezers to distribute COVID-19 vaccines to their employers. So Ford Motor Co. said on Tuesday it's ordered a dozen ultra-cold freezers that can safely store Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine. Moved aimed at ensuring the U.S. automakers' workers have access to vaccines when they're rolled out nationally. New York's Andrew Cuomo cancels Thanksgiving with his 89-year-old mother after COVID backlash. He denounced that he was going to spend Thanksgiving with his family after urging New Yorkers not to do so, but after backlash, he gave up and said, never mind. Man at the center of South Australian COVID lockdown, extremely remorseful and deeply sorry. Solicitor acting for the 36-year-old man released a statement, so his lawyer, if you're in the U.S., Tuesday, saying some information circulating was not accurate. He did not to foresee or intend that things might unfold as they have. The man, who also worked in the kitchen at Stanford Medi Hotel, initially told contact tracers he had just picked up a pizza from Woodville Pizza Bar when he contracted COVID-19. So, this information led South Australian authorities to believe there could be much more widespread community transmission in the state and sent the state into a 6-day lockdown. It's very sad indeed. There's a lot of danger in the Saharan. Fair Observer has a longer piece about some of the violence happening in Morocco. And, oh, that's all the time we have. But World Socialist website has a bunch of good stories today, including some about bodies in a freezer.
That sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.